As we settle into the retreat and into our cultivation of the meditation, it's important to remind ourselves, say what we're doing, what the purpose of our meditation is, what the fundamentals within the meditation are, because it's so easy for the kind of the desire mind to take over and set up goals and expectations of what we would like to get from the meditation, and then forget what the basic foundation actually is, the fundamentals. And certainly the Buddha emphasized over and over that the say that the central importance of mindfulness and the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness. So that within the meditation, although one takes the breath as the object, one is working with the clarifying the breath, one pointing the attention, but it's important not to lose sight of the fact that it's the foundations of mindfulness that has a quality of freeing us, of liberating us, of creating a context whereby we can understand things clearly. And that's really what the meditation is for. It's for understanding, for penetration, for relinquishment. And obviously one has to make continued efforts at one point in the mind, but sometimes we, as I say, we lose the track, lose the plot, and we need to keep reminding ourselves of how necessary it is to be aware and reflecting on where does this meditation fit into the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness. That a fundamental understanding of okay, this is body, this is feelings, this is mind, these are mind objects. Being able to recognize that, see that clearly, because when we see that more clearly, then what starts to become apparent is the basic impermanence of the of phenomena, that instability, the inability to claim ownership. And so this is why it was one time when the Buddha was speaking with Ananda and saying, they were talking about various wonderful and marvelous qualities of the Tathagata, and of course talking about his special powers, Ananda sort of talking about his special powers, special circumstances, special karma, special birth or whatnot. And then the Buddha's comment was you should remember this wonderful and marvelous quality. He said that that the Tathagata, when feelings arise, they arise knowingly within the Tathagata. When they continue knowingly. When they cease knowingly. When perceptions arise, they arise knowingly. When perceptions continue, they continue knowingly. When perceptions cease, they cease knowingly. And when thoughts arise, they arise knowingly. When thoughts arise, continue, they continue knowingly. When thoughts cease, they cease knowingly. And the Buddha thought that that was a real wonderful and marvelous quality. That one. All the other stuff was sort of froth. And that is because it's, you know, this is where we create suffering, this is where we create entanglements, this is where we create problems, this is where we create confusion. Is when we don't have that continuity of mindfulness, we're not aware of what our feelings, what our perceptions, what our thoughts are. So to be reminding oneself that this, that perspective and the foundations of mindfulness are essential. The Ananda was asked by a monk what would be the cause for the decline of the Buddha's teachings after the Buddha passes away, and what would be the cause for the stability of the Buddha's teachings, continuance of the Buddha's teachings after the Buddha passed away. And Ananda answered very briefly, just saying that when the four foundations of mindfulness are not cultivated and practiced by the disciples of the Tathagata, then the Buddha's dispensation wouldn't last long. But when the four foundations of mindfulness are cultivated and practiced, then the teaching would be establish itself firmly and over a long period of time, so that the whether it's internally in terms of our own practice or even in terms of, you know, if we want to do something that's of real benefit for the for the Buddha's teachings, then this cultivation of the foundations of mindfulness are really the central piece. When the Buddha himself talks about the mindfulness of breathing, then he says when the mindfulness of breathing is cultivated and practiced, it supports the four foundations of mindfulness. And when the four foundations of mindfulness are cultivated, then it supports the seven factors of awakening. Okay, when the seven factors of awakening are cultivated and established, then one can experience liberation and freedom. So that when we're cultivating the mindfulness of breathing, this is not something separate, the Buddha's discourses on mindfulness of breathing, when he breaks it down into the 16 stages of cultivation, then it's broken up into, let's say, four sections of four, corresponding to the foundations of mindfulness, so that the taking the body as the basis of awareness or foundation of mindfulness, and being really established within the body. This is a both. The two previous days of instruction, there's been both Ajahn Amaro and myself have emphasized this establishing of awareness in the body, with the body as a base, and it's really quite essential, fruitful to get that, have that anchor of the body. It's so much more apparent what our minds are doing when we have a mirror to reflect it. And the body can be a very clear mirror, kind of a touchstone to be able to both cultivate and sustain awareness, so that simple rhythm of the breathing, breathing in long, breathing out long, breathing in short, breathing out short. These are the foundations of establishing awareness in the body, and for being able to sustain attention, mindfulness. When Ajahn Buddhadasa teaches about mindfulness of breathing, and the last many years of his life, he put a lot of emphasis on mindfulness of breathing, and one of the things that he said as a and he would emphasize the 16 stages and go through it quite formally, but what he would say that each session, when you start a meditation session, wherever you've sort of been practicing with the previous session or the previous day, whether it's the 10th stage or 12th step, whether it's in the feelings or mind or mind objects, that to come back to begin each meditation with that first step, being very attentive to the in-breath, the out-breath, really tuning into the rhythm, the smoothness, the refineness, the coarseness of it, and so that you're really beginning anew with that establishing in the body and in that rhythm of the breath, as one feels comfortable, and the mind is is clear, then one can start to explore other aspects of, say, within the framework of the foundations of mindfulness, but it's always tapped into the breath anchored in the body, that simple rhythm. And I think it's important to keep coming back to that because of its simplicity. There's such a tendency for the human mind to create complications and make things needlessly complex. Everything that we need to know is sort of within this present moment. Everything we have to understand and accomplish can be experienced within one breath. It's not sort of this getting more and more degrees and more credentials after one's name to be able to understand the Buddhist teachings. It's really about being able to settle, clarify the mind, and the breath is the most sort of immediate apparent tool to accomplish that, so that to take the breath and to just begin with that, breathing in long, he knows that he breathes in long, breathing in, breathing out long, he knows he breathes out long, breathing in short, he knows he breathes in short, breathing out short, he knows he breathes out short. So that there's just that the rhythm of the breath is you're settling into that. From there, then one can start to pay attention to experiencing the body in different ways, experiencing the breath body, and how one experiences the body, how one experiences the breath. Because it can be, say, the body, just to familiarize oneself with the body, to really feel how the body is experienced, and the as one is breathing. So sometimes there's this feeling of constriction, and the breath can feel wonky, distorted, but still, it's an in breath and it's an out breath. One can feel extraordinarily expansive, and the breath, as one breathes in and breathes out, it's almost as if there's no boundaries. There's no. The body is experienced as something very subtle, or almost imperceptible. There's no weight. There's no walls or boundaries. But it's an in breath and it's an out breath. So that to how one experiences the body as one's breathing, just feeling the whether it's relaxed or it's not, whether it's painful or it's comfortable or uncomfortable, and to relax, use the which is the last step, calming the bodily formations, and Now this is something that Ajahn Lee talks about when he, because as I say, the breath meditation was a big aspect of his teaching. And using the breath, making the breath comfortable so that the body is comfortable, creating a sense of ease, comfort, lightness. And that's conjoined with each in-breath and each out-breath, as one's breathing in, to really to calm the body, to soften it, to allow it to be easeful as the breath is going out. To let out, to release any kind of tension or heaviness that one feels in the body. And obviously if it's experiencing it in the body, then it's going to be a mental feeling associated with that as well. So that one's creating a sense of ease and well-being using the body, using the breath, but obviously it's going to be affecting the mind as well. As as one continues to work with the body, then, to continue using these four foundations of mindfulness in the structure of the, say, as the Buddha lays it out in the tetrads of mindfulness of breathing, that the being attentive to feelings and when we're cultivating our meditation practice, and say with mindfulness of breathing, be ready to continue to experiment within the framework of the mindfulness of breathing, the 16 stages, because it's. There's an element within us that is sort of like feels that well we haven't quite got the body part down, and haven't quite sort of mastered the maybe you can be at the getting a long breath, knowing that long breath. As it goes in, long breath, as it goes out. One could do that for the rest of one's life and still feel that one never mastered it. So be willing to experiment and, which isn't, just skipping over it or neglecting to cultivate mastery or a refinement, but it's just recognizing, giving the mind different opportunities to investigate, to work within the meditation. Because sometimes what makes meditation dreary, or we lose interest, and if we feel that if we just force ourselves to keep hammering away at one point over and over and over and over again, then we'll start to feel constrained and lose interest. And one of the important aspects of actually allowing the mind to become peaceful and to cultivate concentration is that interest. The mind is interested in what it's doing, interested in what's happening, what are the obstructions, what's the benefit, what am I learning, how does this fit in with the structure of the Buddha's teachings, how does this create happiness, how does this create suffering, how do I bring the mind to one pointedness, so the mind is really partaking of tranquility. And without that interest, then the mind just starts to drift, and when the meditation loses its kind of vigor or its aliveness. So that to especially with that structure of the mindfulness of breathing, the 16 stages, there's all sorts of entry points of investigation and training and practicing and working with and even playing with the breath in its different aspects. To feeling, to start to investigate the qualities of feeling. This is the second foundation of mindfulness, and in the structure that the Buddha gives, the Buddha says it's experiencing piti, experiencing joy. One is mindful of the breath going in, experiencing joy, one is mindful of the breath going out. So that the two first sections of that of this tetrad is experiencing piti, experiencing sukha, experiencing joy, experiencing happiness, and there's a certain level of assuming that one has established a degree of concentration from the attentiveness to the aspects of body, and and if that is there, that's fine. If it's not, then that's not a problem. It's just another aspect to be attentive to, and just knowing that that's not present, and because there's other aspects in the realm of feeling that the Buddha lays out. So let's say the experiencing in Pali citta sankhara, which are feeling and perception. So that as one's breathing in and as one's breathing out, to be attentive to their mental formations or things which form the mind, the activity of the mind, all mental action or movement has feeling underlying it, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neither pleasant or unpleasant, and perception, sanya, so that to be attentive to that as one's breathing in, as one's breathing out, to be really recognizing what is the feeling tone in the body, in the mind, what is the association in terms of its pleasantness or unpleasantness, neutrality. Where does the mind what is the perception there, either the memory or the association, and then the feeling tone that's associated with that. How, what is it, what is that, what is it? Because it's, this is what is starting to put the mind into whatever mental formations are being created. That is where it's beginning. That is its arising point. Now, whether it's thoughts of reflecting on Dhamma, reflecting on the impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, non-self, or just scattered, demented thoughts, they all have a feeling tone. They all have the perception to them. So that to keep coming back to that point, and then the last piece of that section is calming the mental formations, so that to calming, settling, clarifying, being able to bringing the mind back and attention back to those feelings and perceptions that are associated with calm, with well-being, with clarity, so that the these are, and using the breath as the say the vehicle to be attentive to it. It's like you're as hooking into the breath and feeling and being attentive to that feeling tone, hooking into the breath and almost really sort of coasting it, riding on it, so that one is both investigating and as well as settling, allowing the breath to, and even say regulating it, seeing how one holds the breath, what kind of feeling is associated with it. Sometimes we are trying so hard that the feeling is one of unpleasantness. Sometimes there's and one needs to loosen how one holds the breath, allow the breath to be really easeful. Sometimes the perception and feeling that one is experiencing, and the mental formations that are being created are one of, say, of scatteredness, of lack of focus and purpose, just sort of wandering off into the nebulous realms of the mental universe. And there it's important to really bring attention to the breath, clarify the breath, or say regulate the breath, so one's creating focus, one's creating a feeling of clarity, of purpose, so you're using the breath as the vehicle to understand and reflect and investigate these four foundations of mindfulness. Being attentive to the mind, the next tetrad. Being attentive to the mind, experiencing the mind, so that there's what's the underlying tone of the mind? What is the mood of the mind? Does it have desire, lust, greed, or is it free from desire, lust, greed? What is it? What is it? What is it? What's the tone? What's the? Is there hatred, anger, negativity, or is there? Is the mind free from that? Is there confusion, or is there not? So that to be really cognizant of the what is the state of the mind? What kind of state is it in? What is it? What is its, say, predominant tone? And that that's a one has an extraordinary range in the discourse on the Satipatthana Sutta. The Buddha gives an extraordinary range of what one can be attentive to in terms of the mind. This is everything about the mind, whether the mind has defilements, whether it doesn't have defilements in terms of greed, hatred, delusion, whether it's concentrated or not concentrated, whether it's developed or undeveloped, whether it's surpassed or unsurpassed, whether it's liberated or unliberated. The whole range of what is possible within the mind is an object of attention, is a foundation of how one is mindful of the mind. So to, and again, this is as the Buddha teaches that the mindfulness of breathing, it's in conjunction with your breath. One is not sort of just separating the mind from the breath and sort of diving into the mental realm. One is using the breath to have a window on the mind, to have an opportunity to see clearly and to experience the mind. Gladdening the mind is the next step in the mindfulness of breathing, and I think this is a really important step for people to take note of, in that so often meditation can get so serious one gets very dutiful, one gets really dry and dried up in trying to make the mind be peaceful, or to trying to understand the mind, trying to, what is this wisdom bit? And as is clear from this stage, this step, that this gladdening the mind is a really important part of the training. Bring a certain delight to the mind, and the delight is obviously one is not sort of going thinking back to the objects of sensuality or trying to use things which are fundamentally unwholesome or unskillful, but using Dhamma, using the recollections of truth, of virtue, of the wholesome qualities of the Buddha, skillful means in different ways, aspects of nature that are soothing and say delighting, so that there's this quality of gladdening the mind. The mind becomes brighter. And I think it's also, you know, it ties back to what I was saying before of interest. And it's so important to maintain an interest in the practice, in the training, in the cultivation. It's not just because one is dutiful or that one is even diligent that one is going to experience one-pointedness and peacefulness of mind. It's because one's interested. It's because one, takes delight in cultivation, that one is willing to apply attention in a very special way, certain way. It's not just, there has to be that balance, so that quality of gladdening the mind is very, very important. As we're, you know, especially as one in a period of retreat like this, if you're just sort of bashing away at the meditation object, you know, by the end of 3 months, you'll be really glad that the retreat is over, is about it. Yeah. But you may not experience much rather than relief. So that on a day-to-day basis, each meditation, really look at what is it that's interesting. What's interesting in these four foundations of mindfulness? What do you want to know and understand in these four foundations of mindfulness? But then, with using the breath as the vehicle to then start to enter into the experience and investigation of these foundations of mindfulness. Concentrating the mind, liberating the mind, are the last two steps in this, in the tetrad on the mind. And you know, in the sense, concentrating, bringing the mind together, holding, shaping, nurturing that quality of settledness, and again, it's really helpful to be with the breath. That you're not just that when you're working with the breath and working with settling and balancing and shaping, it's really you're tuning and trying to smooth the kind of rough edges of the mind, bringing it to a nice whole, so that there's this sense of concentrating. The mind concentrating isn't just again forcing with a force of will, making it sort of willing the mind into submission. No one has to work with it. And liberating it is really letting go of attachments, letting go of desire, really recognizing those forces within the mind that are go out to distraction and dispersal. When the different ways that attachment creates a dispersing of the mind, an edge of unsettledness. The last tetrad of the mindfulness of breathing is around insight, investigation, the investigating the impermanence, you know, really taking the breath, taking the sensations, taking the say everything that comes in the field of awareness, and recognizing impermanence. You know, one of the easiest objects of what is impermanent is the breath itself. And the breath is always moving. The in-breath, the out-breath. And you know, it's teaching one, if one is willing to learn. It's giving us an insight into the nature of everything. To take the breath and just allow impermanence to really display itself. Each sort of, you know, at each level of refinement or as closely as one can watch, impermanence will become even more and more apparent. And when we're able to see impermanence, then we'll be able to let go, to relinquish, and to see things in a way that is dispassionate way, not so fascinated by the with delusion as a basis. Viraka is the second aspect of this tetrad. Viraka, Nirodha, cessation or quenching. Really, there's an ending there which is satisfying, is stilling, is settling. The last aspect is patinisika, which is the relinquishment, letting go, giving back, not hanging on to anything. And to be able to to experience the breath in a way that is, one's not hanging on to anything. One's experiencing it clearly, it's focused and settled, but there's not a need to hang on to anything. And there isn't, on an intellectual level, there isn't, one can see that. But it doesn't take many in-breath and out-breath to recognize that one's grasping after all sorts of stuff, chasing after every little movement of mind in a way that is just so dumb. What do we do in our minds? You know? And you're dragging up old memories of stuff that wasn't even interesting when one was experiencing it in the first place. But the mind will obsess with it. So that sense of really putting things down, dropping, letting it go, giving everything back. Yes. And each breath is an opportunity to say, to start anew, to really establish that as a perception anew. And one doesn't need to go through this from a linear point, start from step one and go to step 16. It's helpful for explaining it, but when you're working with it, practicing mindfulness of breathing, then to, again, a sense of experimenting, and it's not absolutely crucial that it's all completely linear. It's good, it's definitely good to start from, say, the beginning, in the sense of get yourself anchored in the breath. Long breath, short breath, okay, how am I breathing? How am I settled? Am I anchored, settled in the body and in the breath? And then if one wants to explore in different ways, really feel free to explore that, work with it. And obviously you have to be attentive to, am I just restlessly bopping here around and about and not really doing this in a very clear, consistent way. And if that's the case, then it's useful to, again, come back to step one. And if the mind is starting to really move around and be agitated, and then just get yourself anchored in the breath again, and really get settled in the breath, and then start to take the breath and move out into different areas of these foundations of mindfulness, investigating body, investigating feelings, investigating mind, investigating the objects of mind. So that this is a practice which would encouraged, taught over and over and over again in terms of the meditation instruction that comes in the discourses of the Buddha. Mindfulness of breathing is certainly the most commonly taught method which the Buddha used, and these foundations of mindfulness, as it says, it comes up over and over and over again how important it is. There's a lovely scenario where Sariputta sees Anuruddha and he sort of comments, he says, "Boy, you're certainly bright today. Your features are aglow. And what have you been contemplating?" And Anuruddha says, "I've been cultivating and establishing myself in the four foundations of mindfulness." And the Anuruddha goes on to sort of say that whether one is enlightened or not, or say even for an enlightened being, these are the four foundations of mindfulness are the abiding place, and so for whether one is cultivating with the aspiration of freedom, and then even if one were fully enlightened, this is what an enlightened being would be doing, is contemplating and developing, standing on these four foundations of mindfulness.